Welcome to the Off the Page podcast from Franciscan Media, a podcast featuring Franciscan conversations with authors, artists, and educators. I'm thrilled to share with you this special episode in celebration of the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi on October 4th. Today's guest is the president of the Franciscan School of Theology, Father Garrett Galvin. Father Garrett Galvin, OFM, graduated from the University of California, Irvine, and joined the Franciscan Friars in 1992. He began teaching full-time at the Franciscan School of Theology in 2009. He published his first book, Egypt as a Place of Refuge, in 2011, and David's Successors, Kingship in the Old Testament, was published in 2016. Father Garrett has several wonderful lectures available for free on the Franciscan School of Theology's YouTube channel. I highly recommend checking out the channel if you're interested in theology or pursuing a degree in Franciscan studies. I also encourage you to visit our online store if you're interested in learning more about St. Francis or Franciscan spirituality. Visit shop.franciscanmedia.org and click on St. Francis in the top banner to explore our St. Francis collection. There you'll find several wonderful Franciscan classics by authors like Elia Delio, Murray Bodo, and Richard Rohr, and a number of other resources exploring the Poverello's life, legacy, and spirituality. One thing I really enjoyed about today's conversation is the concrete way that Father Garrett talks about his faith and spirituality. He's a seasoned professor. He's an academic. He specializes in Old Testament studies. He's an Old Testament scholar. But like a lot of Franciscans, he has the unique ability in this conversation to not get too stuck in the head, as I sometimes can, and consistently reconnects to the heart. In this conversation, we talked about what Franciscan renewal might look like today on an individual and communal level, as well as how St. Francis lived out the gospel as he followed in the footsteps of Jesus. I really hope you enjoy this episode. So here is Father Garrett Galvin. Well, Father Garrett, thank you so much for joining the Off the Page podcast. I really appreciate you being here.
Wonderful to be here.
So this episode, it will air on or around October 4th, the feast day of St. Francis. So to start off, I was just curious, can you discuss the significance of this day and what it means to you on a personal level?
Sure. You know, we all kind of come to the Franciscans in different ways. And I just kind of got interested in St. Francis, you know, when I was in my early 20s. And I read a fair bit about him and tried to learn about him and things like that. So I actually wrote to the Franciscan School of Theology and said, you know, that I want to be a Franciscan. And they kind of moved that to the appropriate people in our vocations department. And I kind of heard back from them. And they said, well, why don't you come up for a visit? And so I was living in Southern California at the time, and I went up to Berkeley and Oakland. And then they asked me, have you ever met a Franciscan? And I said, no, I've never met a Franciscan. You know, I just know about St. Francis. He said, well, you need to meet some Franciscans. And so so I got to meet the friars in lots of different ways. I saw some of our kind of urban parishes that we were working at. I was able to visit a soup kitchen, a very big social service agency. I saw us working in a suburban parish, and then got to learn about the friars in lots of different ways. Ultimately, I went to Guaymas in Sonora, Mexico, before I joined the friars, and worked down there in all types of capacities. So it was just great to kind of meet the friars and see that we were aligned in kind of what we were interested in doing.
Yeah, what was it when you made that call to FST and said, you know, I'm really interested in taking the next step? What was it exactly about the Franciscan message that led to you making that call?
It was really about Francis's commitment to peace and reconciliation. I just wanted to kind of really throw my hat in with that. You know, there's all different types of things going on. This was back in 92 in our world. And I just wanted to be about peace. And I was just trying to think, what's the most constructive way to do that? And it just seemed to me the Franciscans are also about peace and wanting to recognize the goodness in everyone and make a kind of constructive steps in towards goodness rather than towards violence or towards alienation.
Yeah, can you take us back to that time? Were you beginning to sense some certain things in our culture that were kind of pivoting away from peace, or what was it that kind of led to this inner stirring on your end?
Yeah, I mean, it was really the first Persian Gulf War, you know, so that kind of started in 91, and that was really just kind of what made me think about what I want to do and who I want to be. And, you know, and I had thought about being a lawyer. I had actually gone to law school for a little bit and just realized, you know, that I would probably be an ambulance chaser rather than a good lawyer. I loved the book To Kill a Mockingbird. And I said, well, that's the type of lawyer I want to be. And in law school, I saw that wasn't going to be the type of lawyer that I would be. And so I just could see the ideals that the Franciscans embraced. And I really wanted to be challenged to grow in those ideals.
What was it like for you to meet your first Franciscan?
Yeah, so it was a good experience, but it was a learning experience because you're meeting them on your vocational journey a lot of times, and they have questions for you, and they're trying to help you discern. And to tell you the truth, like, I didn't like a lot of the things I was told to discern about. You know, I had a very idealistic vision and so I needed to kind of just hear about some of their concerns and what it meant to actually become a Franciscan. And as friars, I think we're very good with family, but you do have to leave your family. And this is different than other vocations where you can kind of keep closer ties. And so for me, that was a challenge and led to, you know, some sleepless nights and things like that. But ultimately, I needed to kind of understand the gravity of the decision and what it means to kind of join the Franciscan movement. And so so those guys gave me some good questions and some tough things to think about, and that really helped me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people listening, Father Garrett, also sense that same kind of craving for peace and maybe a frustration in our own culture or where we're at as a society and being able to find that peace. So this theme in particular, how did it speak to you the deeper you went into religious life and the more you learned about Franciscan spirituality and Franciscan theology?
What I really enjoyed at the beginning of my vocation, even before I put on a habit, was that I got to spend a lot of time with people that were committed to the better parts of our world, you know, so like I couldn't have articulated at the time, but, you know, ultimately I was working with nonprofits and I was working in the nonprofit sector. And so I just would come across lots of volunteers who were, you know, giving of their time for something that they were not going to get a financial reward. And so just kind of growing up normally in college and in working, you know, financial rewards are important and we need those. But to see people that are decentered a little bit from that, you know, made a great impact on me. And so so my big impression when I first came to the Franciscans was I got to spend a lot of time now with people who were really focused on the good and it just gave me a much better impression of the world. I think I was a little bit cynical before I came to the friars, and I got to see, you know, people that were really willing to give as much as they could without demanding rewards in return.
Yeah, was it jarring at all for you to kind of be on this legal path, mm-hmm. you know, and then all of a sudden you're entering religious life?
Only a little bit, because, you know, I think, as I said, it was like, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird was my legal dream. And so, you know, at the time, you know, there was LA Law going on and those types of sitcoms, if people remember them. But I was very much, you know, focused on To Kill a Mockingbird. So there was great ideals in that novel, which I think, and I found those a lot of my classmates too in law school. So I saw a lot of people that were really trying to pursue the ideals of, a more just society and trying to help people maybe who've been left out of civil rights or left out of other rights that we all deserve. So I wouldn't say it was jarring. I just realized my path was better, with the friars than it would have been, in a law firm or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So then going back to the feast day, you've given us a beautiful kind of encapsulation of your journey. And you've been a Franciscan friar for over 3 decades now,
right,
correct?
Right.
Yeah. So what rises up in your heart or in your mind when this feast day comes around each year?
Mm-hmm. I always just think a little bit about my journey. I think a little bit about, how we try as Franciscans, and I try personally to, make the marginalized a greater part of my journey. And I think about like failures that I've had and how I've learned from those. And like probably the biggest failure I can think of was when I was first joining the friars, I was visiting my younger brother, who was a student at UC Berkeley, and this was close to where the friars were at the time. And we were walking up a street, I think it was Bancroft Avenue in Berkeley, and I remember I was with a group of friends, and there was kind of a young man who was getting ready to kind of bed down for the evening, in just next to a store, and I caught his eye, and he caught my eye. And then he kind of jumped up and he was like, "You can't judge me. You can't judge me." This was not a good Franciscan look. I was trying to, really be a friar. So I just started moving quick and kind of, trying to brush it off. Like I didn't say anything to him or something like that, but he read my heart because I did judge him in my heart. And so then I just tried to pursue kind of working with that population a bit more. So a few years later, I was back in Berkeley doing a master's, and I had a chance to work in homeless shelters. So I worked for 1 year with men. I worked another year with women and children, and that really gave me a lot more insight. And I think that's our Franciscan call to, to a certain extent. St. Francis, before his conversion, rode around on a horse. He was a generous guy, fun-loving, tossed money to the lepers. But after his conversion, he got off that horse and he met people eye to eye. And he saw that, all of these people are made in the image and likeness of God. And that's certainly been a big part of my journey when I think about the feast day, is just really learning about how all these people are in the image and likeness of God and making that real in my life.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's such a relatable story. And at least for me, one of the things that keeps me coming back to the wisdom in the Franciscan tradition, again and again, is just how challenging it is. Mm-hmm. Right. I read about Francis's response, and in the way his conversion deepened, in relationship with the other, where, at first it's being generous, like you said, but it's from atop his horse, right. And then he's called to go more and more and more into authentic relationship, with this person who's very different from him. What about you? What keeps you coming back, after 3 decades of religious life? What keeps you coming back to the wisdom of this tradition?
There's just so many hidden gems within the Franciscan tradition, and our tradition just keeps on kind of revealing different things to me. And so to just think about something like the incarnation, and I always tell people out here in California, do people like carne asada? And, that doesn't always work in the East Coast, but everyone here knows carne asada. It's kind of a Mexican dish, but that means roasted flesh, and that C-A-R-N, that's the key to the incarnation, the Word made flesh. And to just keep on thinking about God's gift to us in the Word made flesh and how God always intended this gift for us. A lot of times in a lot of other, Christian and even Catholic traditions, we'll get that focused on sin and that the incarnation is a response to sin. But as Franciscans, you know, we'll say, no, the incarnation is God's plan for us always. And, you know, that we're saved, you know, and we see this all the time, people walking around in shirts, I'm saved by the blood of the cross. And that's a true statement. But we're also saved by the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And that life is so important, that Jesus did not come here to be slaughtered on a cross. Jesus came here to form communities. And so for me, to keep on kind of going back to that, to be inspired, to form community, to know how hard it is to do that, to look in the mirror and see my failures in doing that, but to always try to kind of meet that challenge that everyone's made in the image and likeness of God. We have this inherent desire to be part of community, but we have struggles with that. And so so as friars, you know, we really celebrate fraternity or community as, you know, we're brothers to each other. We have brothers and sisters. And so just keep on leaning into that, to me, is the great challenge. And that's what kind of keeps me coming back, that I know I'm going to fail, but each day you get up and you start again.
Yeah, I know. Theologically, that's a huge aspect that really gripped my heart, was their positive, hopeful approach to not only in their cosmology, but the theology behind the incarnation itself. Whereas I kind of came from conservative evangelical world, for lack of a better term, right. And everything was very sin-centric. Right. Everything was very, formulaic. This is what you have to do so that God isn't mad at you. And in fact, God was so mad that God sent Jesus to die on a cross to fulfill his wrath. And then to read the Franciscan approach to the incarnation. In your words, what is the Franciscan approach to the incarnation?
Yeah, I think the Franciscan approach is going to be very much kind of grounded both in the Gospel of Luke and in the Gospel of John. I think one really important thing is to see how Jesus begins his ministry in Luke's Gospel, which is radically different than in Matthew and Mark's Gospel, where Jesus begins basically parroting John the Baptist, conversion. And there's always a place for conversion, but our approach, I think, starts with, you know, recognizing that everyone's made in the image and likeness of God. So this is what Jesus does at the beginning of Luke's gospel. He announces a year of favor of the Lord. He announces that, you know, captives will be set free, and the disabled will become fully abled, and the blind will see, the deaf will hear. And so Jesus takes all these groups that, you know, unfortunately, even today, oftentimes get pushed to the sides, that get marginalized. And he says, you know, these are God's blessings. And so I think we see that in Luke's gospel very clearly. Luke's parables articulate that. You know, in John's gospel, we just keep on hearing about how everything started with goodness. And so in many ways, John's gospel is a reflection of the first chapter of Genesis, where we hear the word good seven times. And so in Genesis, we just see this kind of combination of goodness, blessedness, and order. And we can see Jesus is coming to restore all those things. Not that they were completely absent, but to, you know, I've got glasses on, and when I don't have my glasses on, I can't see very clearly. But when I put my glasses on, and I like to think of that as the Franciscan lens, then I can see, you know, the need for a focus on goodness, blessedness, and orderliness. It's there, but we need to be reminded of it, and Jesus came to restore that for us.
Yeah, I know you specialize in the Old Testament. You brought up Genesis 1. Right. Can you go deeper into that passage? Because I know that that gets interpreted many, many different ways, and I'd be curious what your approach is, or perhaps what the Franciscan approach is to a very fundamental passage like that.
Sure. So, you know, I would say, like, at the most basic, the Franciscan approach is going to focus on Genesis 1, 26 through 28. And so we'll hear Francis refer to that. I think it's admonition M5. And so a lot of times the technical theological jargon will be Imago Dei, which means the image of God. And so what we hear in Genesis 1:26 through 1:20 is that we are made in the image and likeness of God. We as human beings, male and female, are made in God's image. And so Francis recognizes this, and I think this gives him, and this is another little bit of jargon here, but put up with this. I am a professor after all. There's a positive anthropology. So anthropology in the theological world isn't the social sciences. It means, what does it mean to be a human being? And we can think of that in a negative way, and that we're just focused completely on sin, that we're fallen and things like that. And we never deny sin as friars, but we say God began, you know, with goodness, blessedness, and orderliness. And so we're made in that image. So that, I think, is a fundamental Franciscan focus. And then I would just take that kind of maybe one step further. And through modern biblical scholarship, we'll recognize that the first chapter of Genesis was probably one of the last parts of Genesis to be written. And I think that offers us an interpretive key or a hermeneutical lens to read the rest of Genesis and really the rest of the Bible, that at times we will be confronted by different images of humanity in the Bible. And I think we have to keep on coming back to that goodness, blessedness, and orderliness, which is such an important part of Genesis 1.
Yeah. Are there any other themes, books, passages in the Old Testament that are particularly important to you in your own spiritual journey and your own Franciscan spirituality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Psalms are very significant for me. So I'll often think of Psalm 8, and I think that's written almost in tandem with Genesis 1. And here we hear about humanity, and it says that we're made little less than the gods. And so again, we've got this kind of positive anthropology present. I like to kind of think about the Psalms of flourishing, and I think flourishing for me is a very important biblical theme that is Franciscan. So we see this in Psalm 8, Psalm 19. I like to think a lot about Psalms 51 and 104 because we have the presence of the Spirit in there and the idea of renewal. And I think renewal is a very important Franciscan theme. We kind of do this, you know, every day. We have to be committed to ongoing conversion, to kind of learning from our mistakes. And these Psalms, especially Psalm 51 and 104, invite us to renewal and tell us that the Holy Spirit is an important part of that. So the Psalms work out very well. I mean, I could kind of go through almost every book of the Bible and point out different things. We would also kind of look, you know, very carefully at, you know, the book of Micah. I think it's Micah chapter 6, verse 8, that kind of invites us to walk, you know, humbly with God. The book of the prophet Isaiah was a great inspiration for St. Francis because we see the suffering servant in that. And so we know that, you know, and I think it continues today, and we just heard, you know, in church, if we were in church last couple Sundays, this focus on what does it mean to be great? And oftentimes the disciples picking very conventional models of greatness, but we see Christ picking a model of the suffering servant, of being someone who is committed to the least in society and will oftentimes look the least. And I think Francis was very inspired by that. So those would be a few other touch points in the Old Testament.
Yeah, you can just go through the whole book if you want.
I'm tempted.
We have time. You have 3 hours. So I was wondering, you mentioned the positive anthropology in Franciscan spirituality. What about some of the verses and passages that seem to indicate, or that some people use to justify more of a negative anthropology? What would be your response?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always have to make choices when we read the Bible. And there's lots of, you know, Bible literally means kind of a collection of books. So we've got 39 books in the Old Testament, and we've got 20 something in the New Testament. And so if you kind of try to kind of pick out some negative verses, you will be able to find them. And so this is where I always feel like we have to kind of make a decision, what's going to be, you know, in Latin we say the ipsissima verba, the most important word for us. And then we kind of trace that. That doesn't mean that we don't listen to all the other words. And we all know, or certainly I know in my life, there's times when I have to hear about sin. There's times when I have to confront the difficulties in this world. And those are, you know, as a human being, you don't get out of that. And you, it's very hard to ignore it. I certainly can't. But if I'm going to, at the end of the day, you know, go to verses for inspiration, I know I want to go to Psalm 8. You know, I know I want to go to kind of Psalm 104, to Genesis 1. And so at Mass, in the Liturgy of the Hours, we're confronted by almost all of the Bible. And we should be confronted by that. And we should never try to kind of soft pedal that. But at the same time, if we want to be inspired, I think we know, for example, I'll go to Psalm 139, where we have this kind of vision of God that knows me better than I know myself. And that for me is very comforting and inspiring. And that helps me to get up and kind of keep on trying to do the right thing. Now, other people, you know, are inspired in other ways. And there's no wrong way to be inspired when it comes to the Bible. Just as Franciscans, I think, though, we keep on seeing where Francis is pointing us towards human beings made in the image and likeness of God, to being able to work hands-on in very difficult situations, be that with lepers, be that with the Sultan in Egypt. What allowed him to do that? How was he heard? And so I think that's why it's important to recognize that there is a very good case for a negative anthropology. I just don't think it's a Franciscan case.
Yeah. And you, I wanted to go back to one other thing you mentioned, the concept of renewal. Mm-hmm. Concept feels too dry. Right, I mean, right. It's a movement. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like both on a personal and a communal level? I mean, I know the famous story, Francis, about, you know, Francis, rebuild my house, for it has fallen into ruin. I mean, this is something that is a participatory act in renewal, in the rebuilding of the church. Where does your mind go when it comes to the Franciscan approach to something as expansive as renewal?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of there's a personal dimension to it and there's a communal dimension to it. And so personally, you know, there's some days, weeks, months where you're feeling on top of things and you just kind of have to kind of keep things going the right direction. But then I think I certainly know personally, I'll hit a roadblock, I'll have a difficulty. And so I know that I need to have a yearly retreat. I need to have, you know, time to kind of pray, time to hike, time to do things that are going to kind of help me. And then I need to reflect, you know, every day on kind of what's right with the world and where God's blessings are. So I think that's where the spirit is. And so personally, those are all, I think, parts of renewal. To you know, it, like the word in Hebrew is hodesh, and that is related to the cycle of the moon. So we get a new moon every kind of 28 days, and that's that sense of renewal that we find in nature. And of course, as Franciscans, creation is very important to us. We think of the book of Scripture. St. Bonaventure will talk about the book of Scripture and the book of nature. So personally, we have those challenges. And then societally, we have challenges for renewal. And I think it was very clear to us a couple of years ago, you know, after COVID, that we needed kind of renewal in our society. I mean, you would listen to podcasts or others just talk about, oh, I need to practice just being around people again, because during lockdown, we lost some of our social skills. And we can see this very clearly in our children and the struggles that they're having in school. You know, I have a number of friends who are teachers, and they tell me some of the grades are a year or two behind in their social skills because these children weren't able to relate as groups. We can also see that, I think, in society at large, and we can see, you know, just the lack of trust that is in our society. And poll after poll kind of shows us that over the last 40 years, we've moved from about 50% of people really trusting their neighbor, feeling good about others, to now it's, I think it's around 32%. And that has to be renewed. And how do we do that? Those are bigger questions than I can probably answer, but we can certainly see the need for that. And the Franciscans, I think, do have an answer to that in terms of really kind of working with each other, kind of meeting each other eye to eye, and trying to have a space for dialogue that, you know, you know, we're called very clearly in the Bible to love our enemy. You know, if those, that calls us to conversation, to recognizing that they're made in the image and likeness of God, and the importance of all that we're all in this together.
Yeah, there's something about, at least for me, whenever you're able, like Merton has the great quote from, you know, his mystical experience at the corner of 4th and Walnut that, I mean, it's quite provocative, but he says that, like, if we could just see each other as we are, you know, the real problem would be is that we would fall down and worship each other. Right. And the point is that, like, such a positive anthropology, at least in my mind, it almost makes the space for a dialogical dance, for disagreement, for debate, for not defining someone by their ideas and being able to say, hey, you're a child of God and I'm a child of God. Am I on the right track there?
Absolutely. You know, as Franciscans, a lot of times we'll just say a person is never a problem. And so we have to just kind of recognize that we might not get along with people, or we might see people at their worst, but that is not a problem. That is a child of God, and we have to try to kind of come to a better understanding of people. That, you know, people might have behaviors that we don't care for, and usually there's a pretty good reason, you know, for that. And so we try to kind of come to an understanding. I forget who said it, but, you know, to understand all is to forgive all. And so to just keep on kind of pushing that direction of empathy, to try to understand people better, I think is something that we desperately need now.
Yeah, and sticking with the theme of renewal, I was curious to get your perspective on this. I mean, we kind of talked about it on a personal level and a societal level. I'm curious on a church level, you know, we're navigating this age in which people are generally turning their backs on religion and the churches of their youth. So what would you say makes Franciscan theology unique and perhaps relatable to a culture of people who seem to be spiritually searching, a culture of people that it really does seem that on some level they're craving renewal?
Yeah, I think what's so important, you know, for us as Franciscans is being very concrete. You know, we see St. Francis, you know, connected with lepers, connected with the Sultan in Egypt. And so I think we can often have kind of abstract ideas about others and abstract teachings. And Franciscan, I think, spirituality is going to try to break through that with love. And so I've often heard, you know, for every Franciscan question, the only Franciscan answer is love. So I think trying to kind of really think about what that means, trying to see how we can kind of lead with love and, you know, trying to see people, I think, as God sees them. I think that can hopefully kind of help us. I mean, we've all had experiences, I think, in our childhood or in our young adult years, or maybe even yesterday, negative experiences of religion. And I think that's kind of part of our journey, but that can also spur us on to think about what does a good experience look like. And so I think when we kind of think about the Franciscan charism, there's a wonderful expression I've heard oftentimes about the Black Church. They'll describe someone, you know, he or she is so heavenly bound that they're no earthly good. We want, as Franciscans, to really kind of focus on the concrete. As I said again, you know, we are saved by the life, death, and resurrection. And so what does that life mean? That we're called to community, that every community is imperfect, And that if we're in search of the perfect, we're going to be very frustrated. But if we can kind of find a community that works well, I think that's what we're called to. And as Franciscans, I think we try to just kind of work with the people that come to us to make sure that there's always a message that includes the marginalized and pushes us, you know, a little bit maybe away from the gospel of prosperity that we can see in our society that you just turn on the TV and oftentimes you hear preached, and more towards this kind of wisdom tradition that is, you know, at the heart of Franciscan theology, where we're very much focused on living in the world, really not expecting God to perform a lot of miracles in the here and now. We don't see that in wisdom literature, but knowing that God gave us a good head, that God gave us good people to work with, and trying to kind of keep that from getting too idealistic, because whenever you work in community, there's going to be issues and problems, and we just have to make sure that it's not abusive, it's not dysfunctional, and that it's the normal range of problems.
Yeah, maybe this can be connected in some way to the wisdom tradition, but the Hebrew word you mentioned for renewal, is it Hodesh?
Hodesh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you go deeper into that? That it's not very often I get to interview an Old Testament scholar.
Right, right,
so
right.
I would love for you to break that open for us, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, the place that I would think about that the most is in Psalms 51 and 104. And so what's so important for me there is that Psalm 51, you know, this is a very famous psalm that's often attributed to King David, and basically David's conversion experience after, you know, he kills Bathsheba's husband. And he's kind of confronted by that. Now, in scripture, we see him confronted by that, you know, by one of the prophets. But in Psalm 51, that's all just kind of the background. And in Psalm 51, we see, you know, the presence of the Spirit. So in Hebrew, we have got that word ruah, which means, it can mean spirit, it can mean wind, it can mean breath. But we generally, we like to see Holy Spirit as part of that. So the Holy Spirit kind of comes at the personal level and is part of this kind of realization that I did something wrong in the past and I need renewal to be the person that God created me to be. So we see that sense of it there in 51. I think when we go to 104, we get a sense more of the societal dimensions, and we see a world in which creation is very good and creation can inspire us to have more trust in God. And I think renewal a lot of times is kind of leaving some of that cynicism behind us, leaving some of that sin-centeredness where maybe we're just focused on the sins of other people, and just kind of see, well, God made all these things good. And Psalm 104 will kind of list things. A lot of times it's especially focused on the sun. And of course, in the Franciscan tradition, we'll talk about brother sun, and this is created by God. So I think Psalm 104 just gets us focused on all the things that God created and what they can do for us. And when we start kind of thinking about that, I think that can lead to renewal. It can lead to more trust, because certainly in my life, I can get so focused on the difficulties and the problems and the, you know, shortfallings in budgets and all those kinds of things, that what renewal, I think, is ultimately one of the areas it's pointing us in is abundance. And we'll see, you know, an abundance of goodness in this world. If we jump to the, you know, first sign in John's gospel, we see at the lowest point, this couple is going to be embarrassed at the wedding feast of Cana because they're not able to provide hospitality. And Mary kind of nudges Jesus and says, do something here. Jesus says, it's not my time. Mary keeps on pushing him. And then we have this wonderful sign. Of course, sign is John's language for miracle, in which there's an abundance of very good wine. And so renewal just keeps on kind of reminding us of the abundance of God's goodness in the world that we see in nature, that we see in each other. And we just need to kind of be reminded of that. And I think that's what renewal is all about, being reminded of the good things and knowing that we can put the bad things behind us and start again.
Yeah. Another Hebrew word there, ruach,
right.
Wind, spirit. That got me thinking of Francis as well and his own daily kind of discipline of renewal and how he experienced God in creation, like you said. I mean, it seems to me that he saw the Spirit permeating everything, even places that he least expected. Can you go deeper into that? Because I think there are some really personal kind of ramifications for giving renewal a chance each day on an individual level by finding or maybe daring to see God's Spirit in our everyday life, in creation, in people we least expect, et cetera.
Yeah, I had the great fortune last year of visiting Rome and Assisi for the first time. So I was summoned to Rome for meetings with the order. And so I was like, well, I'm going to get to Assisi. And I decided I'd take my retreat there. And this was, you know, a really great experience and an eye-opening experience. Because I'd never been there before, and I had this kind of image of Assisi in my head, and I'd seen lots of pictures of it. But what I kind of realized was, you know, even though we call Francis of Assisi, he was always leaving Assisi to do the things that he was best known for. And so, I was staying with a group of sisters in Assisi, but I wanted to go down and visit, you know, Rivo Torto, which is where Francis kind of had his primitive community. I wanted to go down and see the sites of the leper colonies. I wanted to go to the Port Sioncula, where Francis kind of received his initial vocation. And I had to leave Assisi and go down there to have those experiences. Then, of course, I wanted to visit the Hermitage, we call it the Carcery, and I had to walk, you know, an hour kind of up the hill, out a little bit of Mount Sabasio for that. And these places that I think are most acquainted with Francis were kind of outside the city, and we can see going down to the leper colony, going down to form a community, it would probably be too expensive to do it in the city. This is where, you know, we get this very kind of tactile, concrete sense of where Francis found God. Francis also spent an awful lot of time in prayer and, you know, we would say maybe on retreat, but he would take, you know, a month or 6 weeks to really, live the contemplative life. And I wasn't able to go to Liverna or some of the other places associated with Francis, but just going up to the Carcery, going up to the Hermitage, you saw this connection with nature, this sense, you know, that you can just see God's goodness kind of very easily in these places. And you can get away from some of the distractions that we're called to embrace. But if we're always, you know, amidst those distractions, it can be hard. And I think this is where the renewal is. You go up to the Carcery, you go up to the Hermitage, and then you can come back to where all those distractions are with a renewed mind. You can go and spend time with the lepers or form communities. And this is where I kind of saw Francis, you know, being centered in Assisi, but seemingly always leaving Assisi to do the things that he's most remembered for.
Yeah, that's so true. I never thought about that, but he really should be called, like, instead of Francis of Assisi, like Francis of every other place around Assisi.
Right, absolutely.
And not just in the immediate kind of proximity, but I mean, Liverna is a hike, yeah. Rome is a hike. It's very interesting. One more kind of societal church question about renewal. You're the president of the Franciscan School of Theology. Mm-hmm. How do you see the world of academia and Franciscan theology? How do you see that having an impact on renewal on a societal level and a church level?
Mm-hmm. Well, as Franciscans, you know, we're fortunate that we've spoken a lot about St. Francis, but of course we've got St. Clair. And she gives us a spiritual tradition that kind of builds on Francis, I think helping us think more about wisdom literature than St. Francis did, helping us think more about divinization, about, you know, how God is present within our lives in a very profound way. And then we can kind of turn to the doctors of the church in the Franciscan tradition, St. Anthony of Padua, but I would think particularly of St. Bonaventure. And then some of our other great thinkers like Alexander of Hills or Duns Scotus or Peter John Alevi. All of these people are going to be very much focused, and this is an academic word, but I'll say it, praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. And this is kind of the opposite of theory. And this is, you know, my experience of academia is that there's a lot of very practical people. All these institutions have to be run, and we have to run them well. And so everyone involved in academia knows the importance of practicality. I think the Franciscan tradition, you know, in some ways kind of canonizes that and says that whatever solutions we're coming up with, we have to remember that those are solutions for human fulfillment. Those are solutions for transformation. Those are solutions for ongoing conversion. Those are solutions that help us love God and love our neighbor. And so we need to be kind of dealing with those kind of very practical things. And, you know, the Franciscan School of Theology is ultimately a school of ministry where we're training people for ministry. And, you know, we live in a world right now where there's all these different kind of ideas about, you know, how we're going to have renewal or how we're going to be Catholics. And you kind of see lots of different models and you'll see lots of kind of solutions, maybe wholesale solutions that involve radical change. But I would say, you know, as a school of theology, a school of ministry, we're into kind of retail solutions. And retail solutions means patience, charity, and humility. That we have to always be teaching people how to work with those things. That we can have this kind of vision, this theory for how we're going to be a better Catholic Church. But we need to have the skills to work with other people. And if we're not training people to be more patient, to be more humble, to be more charitable, and we're going to kind of really struggle with that. So the Franciscan School of Theology, like many other schools of theology across the country, are kind of very focused on that vision.
Yeah, I love how you brought it back to the practical there, because even when I was working on my capstone thesis, right, I was spiraling into Bonaventure's Trinitarian metaphysics. Mm-hmm. And then as I was just dizzy and disoriented, I was thinking about Francis like prohibiting his brothers from owning books, right, and this right. seeming allergy that he had to knowledge and learning. Not learning in a lived sense, but learning in a knowledge book sense. And what would your response be to someone who pushes back and says, Francis would be, he would not want a Franciscan School of Theology today.
Yeah, I think Francis was certainly trying to kind of make a point, and you know, what he really wanted was poverty with joy, you know, and that's voluntary poverty. We always have to recognize that poverty in and of itself is an evil. But when someone chooses voluntary poverty, then he wants that to be found with joy. I think Francis would be concerned, as I think we should all be concerned, if we're simply using academics or academia to kind of build up our status. And so I'm sure he saw some of that. And that's certainly, you know, I see some of that. You know, I see some of that in myself. And so Francis, you know, was speaking with St. Anthony of Padua, a doctor of the church, and he said, I don't have a problem with, you know, with education. It just has to be on the knees, meaning that we need to have piety. And by piety, I mean devotion, that we're kind of committed to love, to charity, and to humility. And so those are the ways that I think Francis wanted people to go about. And it's very clear when you read Francis's writings that Francis read a lot, that Francis prayed a lot. You know, one of the beautiful things about the Franciscan tradition is just how grounded it is in sacred scripture. And you aren't able to ground it in something that you don't know, in something that you haven't studied. So it's clear to me Francis did that work, and he just wants to make sure that we're not trying to kind of build ourselves up, but we're trying as best we can to kind of build up a community. So there's always going to be a struggle and a challenge with that. But I really do believe that renewal is rooted in study. And Francis took that time away to study scripture. All of us are called to take time away from what we're doing in order to do it better. And if we understand our Franciscan tradition, and if we study our Franciscan tradition, we'll see kind of 800 years of trying to kind of contextualize what we're doing. So there's abuses. Francis saw those abuses. At the end of the day, he just said, we need more devotion. So I think as long as we're trying to kind of lead with love, we'll hopefully get closer to that reality.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think that's a great way to kind of situate it. And it's curious what you think about this, but Francis's approach to ideas, I think it's very relevant today because it seems like culturally, societally, we are addicted to our ideas and we are addicted to certainty. And we're addicted to feeling like we're the ones who are right and pointing the finger at those who are wrong. And humility got lost in there somewhere in our approach to ideas. Any thoughts on that as it comes to renewal in our own culture and our society?
Yeah. So I think, you know, a little bit the danger is that, you know, an idea, I think, is an abstraction. And this is where our emphasis on praxis, our emphasis on, you know, kind of the lived reality and becomes very important. And so I think Francis had an idea of what it was to be a leper from the top of that horse. And he had a much different idea once he actually started talking to them. And we see that Francis had an idea of, I think, what it meant to be a Muslim before he went to Egypt and met Muslims. And then he seems to have had a much different idea, and he seems to have been able to recognize important parts of their culture when he went there. So I think, you know, ideas become concrete when they're in, you know, a person, you know, when they're in an experience. And so we have that kind of push to, you know, rather than to kind of condemn abstractions, to really think about people. And even though there's people that, you know, I would disagree with, you know, terribly, I still have to say, you know, that person's made in the image and likeness of God. And there's a reason why they're saying these things. There's been some type of hurt. There's been some type of disregard of them. And so I have to be able to try to hear them and then try to dialogue with them using the gospel. And so we see Francis doing this. You know, I think we see Jesus doing this beautifully with the Samaritan woman, with the Syrophoenician woman. There's conflict there, but then there's two people. And ultimately, at the end of those stories, there's two people who see the blessing, the goodness, and the call to orderliness in their relationship rather than a call to chaos and just kind of participating in these things that cause our society to be more chaotic. And we can see that, you know, and for all the good, you know, we're using technology, hopefully for good here, but we also see that technology can be used for chaos. And we have to, I think, fight against that.
Yeah. You mentioned patience, charity, and humility, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, gosh, those are three things that we need more than ever today, it seems like, in our relationships with each other and in our own personal, but then communal renewal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know we're winding down here. Anything I left out or anything else you'd like to say? Or,
you know, I think maybe to just kind of maybe think about three things that are important in terms of gospel living. When one reads Francis's biographies, you know, we start oftentimes with first Celano, but we also look at Francis's writings, which are, I think, are a lot more extensive than people realize. You know, we have to kind of think about, like, what does that look like? You know, and so Francis clearly heard the missionary discourse of Matthew, which is around Matthew chapter 10, verses, let's say, 7 through 9. And this is, you know, a very clear call to, you know, without cost you have received, without cost, you are to give. Do not take, you know, gold or silver or copper for you. So we see this very concrete sense, you know, that Francis hears, don't take, you know, gold, copper, silver. You've received so much that you do not merit. So without cost, you've received, and then we're supposed to kind of give that back. And so there's a certain simplicity to that. When we think about Francis, I mean, there's two verses that come to mind when we think about simplicity. You know, we're called in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21, to walk in the footsteps of Christ. So we can see a certain literalness to that that Francis tries to follow. And that is always, I think, going to lead to community when we're walking in the footsteps of Christ. And then we'll hear from St. Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9, and God chose to become poor so that we could become rich. So this is that kind of voluntary poverty. And then when we think about rich, what are we thinking about in terms of richness? You know, I think it's, you know, becoming rich in mercy, becoming rich in empathy, you know, becoming rich in humility. There's these calls that are important. So we have that call for simplicity, and Francis kind of really accentuates that. You know, I think there's also a call to rediscover God in creation. And so Francis will kind of refer to that call. And the last thing that Francis seems to have written is the Testament, you know, and he'll tell us kind of very clearly, you know, for when I was in sin, it was too bitter for me to see lepers. And I think that means it's too bitter to be part of creation, you know, that we want to somehow maybe have some kind of abstractions that we're part of, that we see, like Francis saw himself as perhaps a knight and all that that role entailed, rather than to see himself in something that God kind of clearly created. And so there's a great focus then, you know, on ultimately, you know, seeing God in the sacraments that are part of our life as Catholics. You know, all Christians, I think, can agree on the sacrament of baptism, and then Christians kind of expand as we go there. But we have that kind of sacramental life. And ultimately, the sacraments continue the divine incarnational presence in our lives. As Franciscans, we focus, you know, very much on, let's say, how the Eucharist is in a very simple piece of bread. And that becomes transformed. But that's always before us. And we can think about how Christ hid himself in the presence of an ordinary baby. And there would be nothing, absolutely nothing, that would indicate that that baby was anything other than ordinary. And yet God had the humility to become that baby. And then finally, you know, gospel living, I think, is part of, you know, the call to radical trust and dependence on God. And as friars, we focus on that, the paths to that in holiness and joyful living. And so we have, you know, that sense of trust. Another word for trust is faith. And we're kind of constantly called to develop that. We see that, you know, at the heart of the gospel, how we can trust God, how we can be more dependent on God. And that allows us to kind of give up and live, you know, and everyone does this in different ways, but to live this kind of sense of voluntary poverty. And we know that without joy, that poverty can just seem negative, that poverty can seem kind of very forced. And so we see Francis, you know, drawn to the gospel, I think, first and foremost. You know, scholars will argue whether he intended on kind of founding a community, that ultimately, I think, comes out of trying to walk in the footsteps of Jesus, who formed a community. But he first heard that gospel to kind of get on the journey, to let go of those things that were holding him back, and to have more faith, more trust in God like Jesus had.
Now, I appreciate you bringing those three themes on gospel living kind of here to the end of our conversation, because I think that we talked about a lot, but I think they, everything we talked about goes back to those three themes in some way. So yeah, thank you so much for your time, Father Garrett.
No, wonderful being here with you. Keep up the good work on your with Franciscan Communications. I mean, it's just wonderful to hear all the different people that you're interviewing and kind of receiving that push to lean into our Franciscan lives, our Franciscan spirituality.
Again, that was Father Garrett Galvin, the president of the Franciscan School of Theology. If you like this conversation, I recommend checking out the Franciscan School of Theology's YouTube channel to explore lectures from Father Garrett and many other professors there, or you can visit www.fst.edu to learn more about their different programs and degrees. I recently completed the online master's degree in Franciscan theology through FST, and I cannot recommend it enough. My education there had a huge impact on my life and my own spiritual journey. So thank you for tuning in. And if you like this conversation, again, I recommend exploring our St. Francis collection in our store at shop.franciscanmedia.org. Thanks again to Father Garrett and FST, and thanks as well to Father Cyprian Concilio for providing the music for this episode. This is Stephen Copeland, signing off. Peace and all good.
I will lead you into the desert with me and tenderly speak to your heart.